Hello and welcome back to another edition of Podcasts from the Edge with me, Peter Bruce. And this time, I'm on my own, so to speak. Well, literally and possibly figuratively as well. We'll see. The G20 summit in Johannesburg over the weekend was full of sparkle and pomp and ceremony. I have to say that watching aircraft carrying the political leaders of old colonial powers like Britain and France and big trading partners like Germany and Japan and emerging powerhouses such as India and Brazil land here and disgorge their precious human cargo really gave me a lump in my throat. I was really proud, and I am a proud South African, always will be. And troubled as and confusing as we can be, this is still a serious country with a serious economy and serious people. We're not, as some folk around the world and here at home like to pretend, a rebellious place, constantly on the verge of revolution. We're all of us socially conservative, God-fearing, and we all want the same things: personal safety, somewhere decent to live, food on the table, and a better life for our children than we have now. The violence we live with says nothing about our character, but a lot about the inability of our government, primarily the ANC part of it, to do its basic job. That's to keep the rule of law and public safety intact. It repeatedly fails to do that, and the revelations that now swirl around us about the criminality inside our police are a telling measure of how poorly we are often governed. But that need not be forever. We are an authentic and impressive democracy, and our politics are not static. Anyway, led by the Director General of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, Zane Dangle, South Africa was able to fight for and keep issues close to the South African heart into the G20 summit's final communique in Johannesburg: debt, sovereignty over mineral resources, and inequality, amongst others. That was no small achievement, and unless that coming US chairmanship of the G20 next year makes a big effort to rid the G20 of those commitments, they'll stay around for a while. That's obviously not guaranteed, though. US President Donald Trump ordered a total US boycott of the summit, and had the Americans taken part in the whole process during 2025, it's unlikely that they would have survived. So on one hand, he might have done us a favor by staying away, but there's not much comfort in that. The G20 is supposed to be an expression of the importance of multilateralism, many countries acting with a common purpose. And whatever we may think, the US absence weakens that. As it was, the South African government had to seriously stretch the bounds of diplomacy to get the job done. First, Trump warned Ramaphosa not to make a declaration at the end of the summit, saying he should limit himself merely to a chairman's statement. Quite rightly, Ramaphosa ignored him and then cleverly slipped in a summit statement at the very start of the proceedings rather than wait for the end. There was, he said, overwhelming consensus for the statement, which was fine, except for one thing. There was, even in Trump's absence, no unanimous consensus, which is what previous G20 summits have always striven to achieve. That's because Argentina, which did attend, put out a statement regretting it could, quote, not accompany the declaration Ramaphosa finessed through at the start. In a statement, the Argentines said that the Argentine Republic did not accompany the final document circulated during the G20 leaders' summit in Johannesburg. This Argentine decision responds to the break of the consensus rules that govern the functioning of the G20, as well as to substantive differences in the geopolitical considerations contained in the text. For Argentina, they said, it's essential to preserve the consensus rule as the basis for the legitimacy of the decisions adopted within the framework of the G20. In this sense, and after several days of constructive negotiations, our country regrets that it has been decided to consider a declaration as approved without the consensus of all members of the forum, including Argentina, among others. This decision omits a central rule of the G20, an organization whose main mandate is the global coordination of actions and policies aimed at financial stability and economic growth, always, always on the basis of consensus. Likewise, with regard to the conflict in the Middle East, Argentina differs from the partial approach reflected in the document, which omits the regional context and the underlying structural causes of the conflict. Indispensable elements for the advancement of a genuine, sustainable, and balanced peace process. As the summit progressed, though, it seemed that no one cared much what Argentina believed, and European diplomats I spoke to afterwards were asking the same thing I did. What just happened? Some suggested there was no sign of the Argentine rejection in the summit statement itself, but that doesn't really mean much, I don't think. I suspect that what did happen was that that in the many niceties of diplomacy, and diplomatic talk can be very confusing, deliberately sometimes, I believe, offer us these. What could have happened is that the Argentines would have agreed to allow Ramaphosa ahead of time to issue the statement with his overwhelming consensus, and then distance themselves from it soon afterwards. Does it matter? Well, yes and no. Consensus is either absolute or it doesn't properly exist. And the vital thing at stake here was to contain and protect multilateralism. Other recent G20 summit statements have done that by failing to make strong points because not everyone would agree with them. But Trump has been breaking multilateralism since the day he got back into office in January, and his boycott, quote-unquote, of Johannesburg was unprecedented and destructive. He wants a bipolar world where the US, China, and Russia have dominion over their spheres of the world. Taking the gap offered by Trump's absence there, Ramaphosa was able to squeeze in some distinctly un-G20 positions, referring to occupied Palestinian territory, or even the pledge to, quote, triple renewable energy capacity globally. There's no way these would have made it into the leaders, and that's apostrophe after the S, into the leader's statement had the Trump administration been involved throughout the process. Nonetheless, with the support of major European leaders, Cyril got his statement accepted. Many of them have recently recognized Palestine as a state, and Ramaphosa's spokesman, Vincent Magwenya, called it sufficient consensus. But I'm afraid this is not the local GNU he's talking about. The fact is that G20 multilateralism took a real hard knock in Johannesburg at a time when the world is on edge. But Ramaphosa went for broke, and in the moment, he got away with it. But the Americans will pick up at the frayed edges left dangling by this summit when they take up the chairmanship next year. The world is reorganizing itself, said German Chancellor Friedrich Merz at the summit's end on Sunday. He said, the U.S. has played a role in all of this. I don't think it was a wise decision on the part of the U.S. to be absent here. The summit may have held the line, but only just. French President Emmanuel Macron was open about the problem in Johannesburg. One saw this morning, he said, that those gathered here still had difficulty in putting on the table new compromises. One saw that there was a fresh debate on subjects that we believe settled in the past few weeks. And one saw the difficulty we have within the international community in resolving conflicts. We must recognize, he said, that the G20 may be reaching the end of a cycle. He and other European leaders left Johannesburg with the threat of a new and devastating peace plan being proposed by Trump for Ukraine hanging over them. It's an awful deal, basically requiring Kiev's capitulation to the Russian invaders, and seems to have been first drafted in Russian. And it's basically a version of what Trump always wanted when he boasted he could stop the war in a day a year ago. There's nothing the G20 can do about this, but you have to hope that Ramaphosa will be true to the declaration he crafted and not jump into bed with the Russians and their forever ally China if they look like succeeding in Ukraine. He would do far better to stand with the Europeans than Canada's Mark Carney, who collectively banded together to make South Africa's summit a success and to make it work. And for that, they deserve our gratitude. That's it from me this week. I'll be back next week with another edition of Podcasts from the Edge. Until then, keep safe. Bye-bye.